In 1901, a woman by the name of Annie Taylor climbed into a barrel so that she could ride that barrel over Niagara Falls, the first person to do so. The reason for her crazy endeavor? She was struggling to make ends meet, and she was hoping for fame and financial security. It's Ryan from United Faith Mortgage, a faith and family mortgage team that tries to improve your financial outlook without having to ship you over a 170-foot waterfall. Our mortgage team happens to be an arm of a bigger company who is a direct lender, which means our company gets to use its own money and make its own decisions within its own walls. There's no middleman. This advantage often allows us to get you a better rate, which can save you monthly and lifelong money through a refinance, or help you with a cash-out refinance, cashing out some of your home's equity to use for life. We are United Faith Mortgage.
United Faith Mortgage is a DBA of United Mortgage Corp., 25 Melville Park Road, Melville, New York. Licensed mortgage banker. For all licensing information, go to NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Corporate NMLS number 1330. Equal housing lender. Not licensed in Alaska, Hawaii, Georgia, Massachusetts, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Utah.
Welcome now to Faith and Finance Chat. Live with Rob West.
Yeah, we're making up the title as we go, Rob. Hopefully that's okay.
Yeah, no, I like it. Whatever comes out, I'll answer to it.
I can't think of it.
Yeah,
Robbie.
Yeah, we're going to change your name too. So, Ralph, tell us about finances. Okay, so can I just dive in? I was looking at, with bated breath, you know, what was going to happen with the Fed yesterday and with the interest rate decision. And after careful deliberation, they decide to do nothing. What's up with that, Rob? Talk to me about this.
Well, you're exactly right. They held their key interest rate steady for the fifth consecutive meeting, and they're just waiting for more data. They always want data, and I understand why. And the bottom line is that inflation is proving to be stickier than they would like it to be. I mean, it's come down clearly from our high around 9%, which is just ridiculous. But we're still north of their target, well north of their target of 2% at somewhere between 3 and 4. And so they're not ready to lower borrowing costs just yet because they're more interested at fighting inflation. And their key way of doing that is through keeping these interest rates higher and doing something called contracting their balance sheet, which is just kind of taking liquidity out of the system to slow the economy. The key is, can they kind of walk this fine line, this tightrope between slowing the economy and not causing us to tip into a recession? That's what they call a quote-unquote soft landing, and we'll see, you know, whether that's going to come. The consensus is that we're still going to see 3 rate cuts this year, and they'll come in the back half of the year. There's some that, you know, with every meeting that goes by, with inflation, especially with, you know, last month we saw it tick back up. Given all of that, there's some that are saying, are we even going to get 3? That remains to be seen. We'll just have to watch.
Okay, if I could just follow up, and I may be completely off base on that, but it seems like when they lower interest rates, it actually stimulates the economy, which brings inflation rates down, not pouring just more money into the system. It kind of gets us moving. It creates lubrication for the system. Is that a correct assumption?
Not necessarily. By accelerating the economy, it can lead to higher inflation when there's just more money circulating in the economy. And so they contract the balance sheet. Remember, they're the largest investor in the world. They're the ones that kind of control how much money is kind of flowing through the system, and the extent to which there's more money out there, it can lead to inflation when there's fewer goods and services. So, I think, yes, we want to grow our way out of this in part, but the quickest way they can fight inflation and kind of tame that, if you will, is by slowing everything down, taking money out of the system, raising borrowing costs, and that brings prices down because consumers just aren't spending as much.
Okay. Yeah, you were having me, like, I was right on track with you right until the point where you said that brings prices down. I haven't experienced that at all.
Well, I mean, we're seeing some relief. I mean, prices are still up. Year over year, you're paying 20% more for, you know, things like groceries and insurance and things like that. So I get it. I mean, it still hurts and we're feeling it and in certain sectors of the economy more than others. But the reality is they want to, you know, bring that down much further. The way they do that is by slowing the economy. Key is, can we stay out of a recession? And that remains to be seen.
Okay. His name is Rob West, and he is the host of Faith and Finance Chat, this brand new show that's only available on Mornings with Tom and Tabby. Limited edition, apparently, but it's so good to have you here with us, Rob.
Okay, so Rob, I was watching the news as well, and I saw that something happened with realtors and their fees, and I was very interested because I would love to look at property and see if there's a possibility, and every time I look, I'm like, I can't afford nothing. So I thought maybe this could help. What's going on here?
Yeah. Well, you know, what happened is the real estate industry, you know, is reeling from this announcement by the NAR, which is the National Association of Realtors, last Friday, that the group is dropping its requirement for 6% commissions on property values. So for nearly a century, they've mandated that listing brokers split 6% commissions with buyers brokers. But they were sued in federal court last year, you know, on the grounds that the mandated 6% commission amounted to collusion that artificially raised real estate fees. And there was a nearly $2 billion judgment. So as a part of that settlement, they agreed to drop the commission requirement. And so now home buyers and sellers will have to agree on commissions in writing with their agents. I'm not sure that it's quite as big as the headlines are making it out to be, because the real estate commission was always negotiable. But clearly this is going to lead to more negotiation. And, you know, I think the big change is related to who pays for the buyer's commissions. So under the longstanding system, homeowners looking to list their property were typically liable for both the seller and the buyer's commissions, and they would sign a contract specifying the percentage of the commission split. Traditionally, each party would take 3%. But I think this is going to usher in some new standards, which gives all parties really more transparency and negotiating power. And the net result is probably going to be lower transaction costs. And so, you know, we're going to see overall commissions come down, which is going to make homes, you know, slightly more affordable. Let me just say, though, I really believe in the value of realtors and professionals in these transactions. I mean, this is the largest transaction most of us will ever make. You know, having somebody there to negotiate and deal with the contracts, and, you know, we're inviting strangers into our homes. And so having a realtor, you know, help with that and during all of the showings, not to mention the closing and just everything that goes on to this massive transaction, I think it's absolutely worth having a realtor there. Now, like so many other things, like in the investment world, the fact that fees are coming down, there's greater transparency and competition, I don't know that that's a bad thing, but I don't think that minimizes in any way the value of the realtor in the equation.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And Rob West is his name. And if you've got a question for Rob, we would love to hear from you at 423-629-8900. Rob, we are in tax season, and we have a question from a friend who asks this question. How much can an individual contribute to last year's IRA or IRA to gain an advantage on taxes being filed in April?
And yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, go ahead. A lot of people don't realize that you have the opportunity to contribute to 2023 for your IRA in 2024 up until the time you file your 2023 taxes. So potentially, if you wait till the last filing day, April 15th, you could wait all the way up to April 15th to actually make your contribution to your IRA for 2023. Why would you want to do that? Well, I think the ability to get, you know, more money into our retirement plans is always a good thing. We would say target 10 to 15% as your ultimate objective there, assuming you don't have credit card debt and you've got an emergency fund. But the other opportunity is, especially if you know that you're going to have a tax liability, a balance that's owed for 2023, reducing, you know, this contribution to a traditional IRA could reduce that, or it will, because it's going to lower your taxable income. And so that's why a lot of people are thinking at this time of year, oh, maybe I'll go ahead and make that contribution to the IRA, save a little bit on taxes, and get a little bit more working for me in my IRA. So the limit for 2023 is $6,500 for an IRA. And so if you're married, typically you can put in $13,000, even if you have a non-working spouse, because they could contribute to what's called a spousal IRA. So $6,500 is the limit. If you're 50 or older, you get another $1,000, so $7,500 per IRA.
Okay, that is truly amazing. And one last thing, and so that's like the total. So if you've already like maxed out your contributions last year, you can't just like add to it by April 15th. You are limited by either the $6,500 or the $7,500 cap, even if you are planning on giving right up until April 15th. Is that right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter when you make the contribution. The total you can put in for 2023, whether you did that January 1st of last year, 2023, or you do it all on April 15th, there, you know, you can put in no more than either $6,500 or $7,500 for the year 2023, regardless of when you make the contribution.
His name is Rob West. You hear him in the afternoons usually, but we have a very special edition of Faith and Finance Chat featuring Rob West here this morning. Rob, it's always great to have you here with us on Mornings with Tom and Tommy.
I love stopping by. Thanks for having me.
Well, the light's always on for you here. And Estella has this question for you. She says, what are the best federal plans to invest in? I have about 8 to 10 years before retirement.
Yeah, so anything that you can contribute to pre-tax is going to be what you're looking for. So it just depends on who you work for. So by virtue of you asking about federal plans, so if you're a federal worker, you probably have access to what it's called a TSP, a thrift savings plan. And it's basically just the government version of a 401k. And so you'd only contribute through salary deferral, meaning you can't just make that check, you know, contribution. You can't write a check and make a contribution like you can with an IRA. It's got to come out of your paycheck. But you would connect with your HR department or whoever is your plan administrator, making that plan available to you. Let them know what percentage or amount you want coming out of every paycheck. And you can change that at any time. And then get that in pre-tax, which just simply means that the amount that you're contributing up to the limit is going to be excluded from your taxable income for the year. So you get that deduction on the front end. It gets invested among the various investment options inside the plan. The TSP, you know, has some very specific investment options. You know, they've got a stock fund and a bond fund and an international fund and what's called a life cycle fund, which is kind of like a target date fund where you match it up to your expected target date. But you'd pick your investments, then it would grow inside that plan tax deferred. So the taxes aren't affecting the investments. They're free to grow. And then down the road in retirement, when you pull that money out to supplement your income, you pay taxes on it as income. So that's what you would want to be looking for.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Rob. Looks like tax deferred is a really good way to go if you can. But then we have somebody that's also asking a question kind of about a health plan. Rob, when can you sign up for an HSA and is that actually beneficial to have?
Yeah, I like HSAs a lot. They were established in 2003. They're kind of the sister, if you will, of the FSA, the flexible spending account. But the big difference is with an HSA, you don't have a use it or lose it provision. So any funds still in the plan at the end of the year can be rolled over indefinitely, which actually makes it a really effective retirement planning tool as well. And I can tell you about that in a moment. But essentially, it acts like that TSP I was just talking about. You set aside pre-tax income. So again, this is excluded from your taxable income. And it's in this HSA, health savings account, which is essentially a fund that's going to cover the cost of health care that your insurance doesn't pay. Now, you have to have what's called a qualifying high deductible health plan. Well, what does that mean? Well, for 2023, a high deductible health plan means that it has to have a minimum deductible of $1,500 for an individual, $3,000 for a family. So yeah, a lot higher than your typical kind of PPO plan. And the out-of-pocket maximum and minimum of $7,500 for individuals, $15,000 for a family. That's a high-deductible health plan. And then this HSA rides alongside that where you make these pre-tax contributions and then you spend out of it for qualifying medical expenses. to cover those more routine kind of day-to-day expenses before your high deductible healthcare plan kicks in. The reason that it's so nice for retirement is if you're generally healthy, you don't go to the doctor a lot, you can max out your contributions, get that tax savings, and you can actually invest it inside the HSA and let it grow. Then when you get to retirement, you actually, after the age of 65, are allowed to withdraw this money and use it for any reason. Now, like the IRA or the 401k, if you're pulling it out and using it for non-qualified medical expenses, so things other than medical expenses, you'll pay ordinary income taxes on your withdrawals, but you won't have any penalties. So it's just yet another retirement savings vehicle. And if you use it for qualified medical expenses, you won't pay any tax at all, even on all the gains inside of it. So it really is a powerful tool. I know there's a lot to it that I just threw at you there, but bottom line is I really like it.
Wow. I'm just amazed because I'm a fan of the HSA too, not the FSA, because of that use it or lose it clause with the FSA. But I didn't realize that you can actually invest within the HSA plan and kind of have that kind of work as an IRA for you. That's illuminating, Rob. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You know, it obviously, if you're spending it down every year because, you know, you're putting it in there and you're having to use it, maybe you've got kids and you're like us, you know, I've got kids that, you know, play a lot of sports. They're very active. And so we're constantly having broken bones and things like that. And so we're always running to the doctor and physical therapy and, you know, while they're in the healing process. So our HSA is kind of up and down all the time. So we don't invest it. But if you're able to max it out and you find that you're building up more than you're going to use in a year's time, then I think that's a great option to get it working for you.
Okay, yeah, thank you so much, Rob. It's so good to have you with us here on this brand new edition of Faith and Finance Chat.
I just keep thinking, is there anything you don't know? I can't believe all the facts that come out of your head. But hey, Rob, we've got somebody on the line who wants to tell you something really quickly.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, good morning.
Hey,
who's
Rob,
this?
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great.
How are you this morning?
Good. Thanks for your call.
So listen, just wanted to actually just thank you for something. You know, I'm a business owner, and you know, you think you try to always keep your money right, and there's a lot that goes into. Not sure people really understand how much goes into just taking care, making sure everything's in the right bucket, it's paid for, it's accounted for, it's taxed, etc. And my wife heard a message one afternoon late. I wasn't at home, and it was around Social Security, so. She had married and been married 25 years. Husband passed away with cancer. Life continued on. We met many years later, married, and she heard something about, so she's now at this point 64. He would have been 74. You had made mention to some caller about their Social Security benefits. Well, in my infinite wisdom, I said, well, there's just absolutely no way you'll be on mine at some point. It doesn't really matter. We're going to wait till 72. She kind of stores it away 6 months. You're probably grinning at this point. So she asked the question to an accountant, and he goes, and he looked, and he said, well, we need to get him on the phone. So now she receives about $2,700 a month off of his because their length of marriage had been, you know, two and a half decades, and, you know, 25 years. And said, is this, she goes, I've got to ask, is this right? You know, is this the right thing to do? And one of the Social Security administrators said, absolutely. So I will say that a portion of that has gone to Moody and to your broadcast as well. But welcome to Chattanooga. And I just wanted to share that with you. Just when you think you've got it, you know it all. you really don't know anything. There's just so many nuances to all of this, but
there are.
Thank you for that. And always, you know, tell people, keep your mind open, and you don't know everything. And as our accountants have told us, it changes all the time.
Absolutely.
That is so true.
Thank you so much for that. And Rob, thank you for being the one that's closest to knowing the most about everything.
Yeah.
And, well, I certainly don't know everything, but let me just say a quick thank you for taking the time to call. That's very kind. And I'm so thrilled that was helpful to you. And listen, I just want to help you and all of your listeners just be God honoring in how we handle our money. And it is complicated and it does change all the time. And so we just go back to God's word. We try to simplify it. We try to stay on top of it. But it's such a joy to be invited into your stories every day. I'm grateful.
Yeah. And you do it so well, Rob. Thank you so much for all that you do.
Okay, we've got one last question from Kyle, and he said, I had shares in a company that was bought out. I didn't know, and did those shares transfer to the new company, or did I lose them?
No. Yeah, you would have credit for those. So, you know, it could be that, if it was bought out by another publicly traded company, you would often just get shares in that company. If it was taken private, then, you know, you'd be paid out for the value of those shares. So you just need to check with your company and find out and, you know, what happened in this particular situation and whether that was just moved over to a new account and you now have shares, you know, in a different company equal to the value of the old company at the time of the purchase, or whether there's some other plan for you to be compensated.
Okay. Yeah, Rob, thank you so much for just all of your wisdom based in scripture, but helps us navigate this whole crazy world of finances here on this really new edition of Faith and Finance Chat.
Love it. And okay, so as we head towards April 15th, and as we're closing up here, just maybe a few more comments about organizing ourselves for our taxes.
Yeah, I tell you, the more organized you can be, the better. It'll actually save money because, you know, tax professionals work on typically an hourly basis. And so the less time they have to spend organizing for you, the more money you'll save. The IRS has just this week put out three key things that they say can help you with the filing process. Here we are less than a month before the tax filing deadline. They said, number one, just remember that they have the free file program, something called the IRS Direct File Pilot option, where you can direct file at no cost. They've got a volunteer income tax assistance program. They've got tax counseling for the elderly. They have something called mil tax for the military. So just check out irs.gov and see if you perhaps qualify for one of these free file programs. Second, they're reminding taxpayers you might be eligible for something called the earned income tax credit. So this is for low and moderate income taxpayers. The IRS reminds us that millions of people qualify but don't claim the credit. So just do some quick research on the earned income tax credit, see if that's you. And then finally, and we talked about this earlier, don't forget you can lower your tax bill if you're going to have one by funding a pre-tax IRA, which you can do all the way up to April 15th, or when you file your taxes, whatever comes first. So that's a great opportunity to get some money working for you for the future and lower that tax liability today.